Welcome to The Feast Life, where we empower you, the modern homeschool mom, to create a life and homeschool you love, one founded on faith, family, freedom, and fun. I'm your host, Julie Ross, creator of the award-winning homeschool curriculum, A Gentle Feast, and a certified Christian life coach. For more information on today's episode and to access my free gift for you, check out thefeastlife.me. Charlotte Mason once said, life should be all living, not a mere tedious passing of time. So on this show, we seek to savor the feast of life. Girl, grab your favorite beverage and pull up a chair. You are welcome at this table. Welcome to The Feast Life. I'm your host, Julie Ross, and I'm so excited today to be here with Rachel Marie Martin, who just released a new book. And I know as homeschool moms, this book speaks so much to all the things that we are struggling with and have on our plates. It's all about finding the spark of joy again in your life. So welcome, Rachel Marie. Thank you for joining us today. I'll just call you Rachel.
Okay. You can. I'm super glad to be here.
Okay. We're good. Okay.
Yeah, sometimes I'm like, am I in trouble? That was what my parents called me when I was growing up. Yes.
I live in the South too, so two names is very common too. So I want to make sure that I'm calling you what you want.
It's all good. I live in Nashville, so I get that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. So before we jump in, can you just tell my audience a little bit about you and your family and what led you to write this current book?
Sure. So if you don't know me, I'm the writer behind the site Finding Joy. And many people have found me through quotes that I've written and some of the viral articles I've written to moms. And I'm the biological mom to 7, bonus mom to 4. And then 2 of our kids have gotten married and we're the now owners of a little rescue dog named Frankie. So throughout the years, I've been very busy. I've homeschooled many of my years of raising the kids, and I've gone through many reiterations of myself. Mm-hmm. And as a writer and an author, I had this moment where I lost my spark, went on a journey to find it. And the readers were like, how do I get my spark back? And that's what led to this book.
Yeah. I love that. I just love this concept too, because it's not like it's gone. Like
right.
It's there. Sometimes it's buried under things. I think one of your chapters was about like finding the embers. Yeah. Tending to the embers at the beginning. Yeah. And I just love that concept, because especially as moms, this with lots of people in your family, it can mm-hmm. be so easy to put the needs of everyone else before ourselves, because they're right there in front of us. They're glaring. They're loud. Most of the time they're demanding it. And we get to a point, and this happened to me in my life too, and I want to hear about your experience, if it resonates with you, that it was like, I forgot who I was. I don't know who I am anymore. So tell me a little bit about your journey with all of that and how that led to this current book.
Yeah, I would love to. So I had about over a decade ago, I was in a very unhealthy marriage, and I had to become this fighter to get out of it. I was a single mom for a while, and I put everything into that. And then about 5 years ago, my life got, it was like, I would say it was stable. All that energy of that fighting and all that trying to change my life, my finances were fixed, and I was going to be getting remarried, and it was just this place. And all of a sudden, I remember looking in the mirror thinking, I know the reflection looking back at me, but I don't know her anymore. I don't know who she is, what she loves, what her heart is, where's that spark? And I didn't know how to deal with all the stuff that had happened in my life. How do I move forward, and what do I take with me? And that was really the momentum for that finding that spark. Was I also knew time was a commodity that sometimes we take for granted. And older, approaching 50, I realized I didn't want to waste time anymore. I didn't want to put everything to someday and think, oh, I'll figure it out someday, because approaching 50 for me meant all of a sudden I was the next decade 60. Like that really slapped me in the face. And I decided I have to do this now.
Yeah. How old are your kids now?
My youngest turned 15 today, and the oldest is 28. And my bonus kids also fit in that chunk of time there. And none of the kids, they're all like, they all have their own individual year of school, like that kind of thing. It's crazy. Amazing.
That is, I asked that because for me, it was when my oldest daughter, she's 23 now, but when she went off to college, it was, even though I had four other younger ones at home, it was this moment because I was like you, I kept thinking like, okay, one day this will get better. One day, like my circumstances, one day we won't have to move so much. One day the kids will sleep through the night. Like it'll get better. And as they got older, that milestone kept moving. And then I'm like, oh my
yes,
God, she's leaving now. And I'm still waiting for one day. And I'm like, no, I'm going to change my life. I'm going to start taking care of myself. I'm going to make those changes now. So once you recognize that, again, like awareness is the first step. Actually recognizing, okay, what is actually going on and not just living life on autopilot all the time. What were some of those initial steps that you took to get your spark?
What's interesting about what you said is I think back to all the readers that would write in and say, how do I get my spark back? And I thought that is such a vulnerable, because that my, it's possessive. It means that it's you, we all know we have it, right? And nobody's saying a spark. So it's not like this just random thing. And that question, what I love about it is that to me is the first step. It's that admitting, I don't know if I have it. And that's a little bit scary because I think when we're on autopilot, you don't take time to have that self-reflecting moment. And then when you do, it's really easy to push it away. I'm too busy right now to deal with that. And so to ask the question means there's a part of you, which I like your soul, your spirit. It's that part of you that's, I have got to figure this out. And I don't even know what the next step is. So for me, the first step was being willing to not know the next step, which as moms, we like to have everything mapped out. And that was the scariest part was I felt like in the beginning of the book, I described it like I was in a fog. I was in a fog and I didn't know where to go. I couldn't see the stars, but I knew I had to do something and I just took a step. And that to me is the most powerful thing, is being willing to take a step, being okay if you might backtrack and go backwards and take a step the other way, but being willing to do something versus think about it.
Oh my gosh, that's so good. Yes. I talk about over analysis paralysis. And so we can just get into this. I got to figure it out. And I got to know that like when I take this action, this is going to lead to this result. Otherwise I can't take that reaction action. And then we get frozen. And it's no. Once you start taking action, and I love that, let it be messy and see what happens. So what were some of those kind of action steps that you took?
For me, and I love it that you brought up the decision paralysis, because I actually wrote about that because I've struggled with that most of my life, is overanalyzing, making what I'll do is I'll make the decision. And then as soon as I make it, I'll instantly regret the decision and think I got to fix it. And I've been working on that. So for me, some of the first steps were being okay with me stepping out of the busy, because like you were saying, as moms, we're always busy. I've said this, I think I actually might've said this on national TV, but I said it on many shows, where we have no problem making sure the kids go to the doctor, the dentist, their sporting stuff, extracurriculars, the co-op, whatever it may be. And then the second it comes to us, we're like, you know what? I got to reschedule. I'm too busy. And we would feel guilty rescheduling on the kids. And yet for ourselves, we're like, I'll put it off. So for me, the first step was going, absolutely not. I can no longer allow that, whatever that part of me was, to dictate that taking time for myself isn't crucial. Because not only that, is we're modeling to our kids and our friends the importance of self-care. So the first step was being willing to block off the time. For me, one of the things I did, my journey was, I'm a runner. So that year that I really focused on that, I made a commitment that I was just going to run every day. It didn't have to even be perfect. It could have been messy, horrible. It could have turned into walking, but I made the commitment to get out of the house. Now, the first step there wasn't, I'm going to run 3 miles. The first step really was, I'm going to put my shoes on, because I think we have to back it up to, what's the step before the first step?
Yes. I love that. That is so great. And we talk about that. Like I talk about that with my homeschool moms in terms of like habit training and stuff with your kids too, because I have to go run 3 miles, like that is way too hard. I'm not going to do it. Like I can think of a million reasons why I should not be doing it. My brain is like, what are you doing, lady? But I'm like, I can put my shoes on today. I'm going to put on my running outfit and then I might just take it off. I might not even go outside. I'm going to build that habit. So that's just automatic, like brushing my teeth. And now I can do the next one and I'm going to go outside or whatever it is. Start like small ways, so it doesn't seem so scary and intimidating. I love that you brought up that example.
Yeah. I actually know it now. Once I get those running shoes on, 90, 99% of the time, I'm going to end up going out of the door. I even know it as I'm lacing it up, because there's something very powerful that act. It's, and once I'm out the door, that's what it takes. And I really think a lot of times we think I get out of the door, we see several steps down to where we're starting, and then it becomes daunting, or we don't carve out, we don't make that first step just simply part of the routine, putting the shoes by the door or blocking it off on the calendar. Or so it's, how is, for me, backing it up, reversing it. Okay. What is really the first step? Because when we don't know that part, that little gray area there is what often trips us up and stops us from starting.
Yeah. And when you think through it, oh, that's so simple. Of course, I need to put the shoes on first. That way, right. Okay. We have to take the time to break it apart. I love that you talk about putting it on the calendar and blocking that off. And I,
yep.
All time too. The question I get asked about all the time is, okay, I have blocked off that I was going to go for like a 30-minute walk at 2 o'clock today. Right. And at 2 o'clock today, Timmy needed blah, 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 or the cable guy came or someone, or like whatever. So how do you handle that? I would love to hear your perspective.
So I don't generally, unless it's, I'm going to pure bar class or a class, I generally don't block it off on a specific time, because I'm a perfectionist. I'm an overanalyzer. I'll think, oh, it's 2:05. It's too late. I've messed it up. The day is over. Like the whole thing. I will just tell myself, I'm going to run today. That, and so I know that it's the day. Now I like to do it first thing in the day, so it's done, because otherwise keep pushing it off. I don't like running at night. So there is that incentive there, but I really do. I'm not as strict with my schedule as I used to be. I know that during COVID, I had homeschooled the kids. And if there's a list of stuff that I have to complete, let's say the curriculum comes with it, because I know I'm such a list, I'm a cross off the list, I would get over anxious about that. Oh, you didn't do everything. And it would be my husband like, no, you don't need to do everything. They got more, you branched off, you did that. And it's applying that whole philosophy to this part of my life. Like also, if you schedule it for 2, it doesn't mean that you can't do it at 2:10. You could do it at 2:05 or 3 o'clock or whatever. Just make sure that it's important. And there will be days where it doesn't work that day. And that's okay. That's why I love that quote, fall 7 times, stand up 8. Never says don't fall or figure it out. It's, you're going to get off track, you're going to get back on track. You're going to get off track, you're going to get back on track. And that's really what matters the most.
I think what you said is so key, because it's like, you need to know your priorities. So for you, it was like, my priority for today is right. I'm running. And so we can get so in the trap of having to do all this list, but it's okay. What are the things that like actually feel really good to me? And that's a priority, right. Not necessarily scheduling like what time. And you could have a rough idea. Again, I want to do it at 8 o'clock in the morning, or I want to do it in the afternoon, and then have that flexibility. But knowing, okay, this actually feels good to me. And I talk to so many moms who are like, I don't even know what nourishes me anymore. What do you do when you're at that place where you're like, I don't know what feels good?
A lot of people will say, I want to get my spark back, but I don't even know myself. I think it's the same thing. I don't know what I like. I don't know. And that's where I say it's the first step. So you have to be willing to say, I don't know, but I'm willing to figure it out. I don't know, but I'm willing to try. And that I don't know, it's, instead of it being a negative, I think, what if we flipped it to, I'm wondering what I love to do. I'm going to try all these things. And if you don't like something, then instead of it being negative, it could be, at least I figured out I'm not going to go do that again. You start to narrow it down. I give the example, my husband and I have trained entrepreneurs and bloggers for years. And I give it a lot of times, these, they'll come in and they'll say, I don't know what to write about. I don't really know what I love. And then he always gives like a very far example. Would you want to write about Middle East oil prices? And they're like, absolutely not. But then it like proves you do know what you don't want to do. It's figuring out what you do want to do. And I think that shift in there helps, is because otherwise it's just too broad. And so I say, look back at, start to wonder about the things that you loved as a kid. Like I played basketball as a kid and I played piano, and we play basketball with our kids. I love doing that. And I still play piano. So maybe just start to allow yourself to wonder. And I think wonder is a powerful, way to be and way to figure things out.
Yeah. And I love that so much, because when we are people that are full of wonder for ourselves, that translates over to our kids. And so if we want them to approach education with a sense of curiosity and wonder, which kids naturally have, but school, we can
right.
get out of them. But if we want to keep fostering that as they keep going, we have to have that within ourselves. Ooh, I wonder, do I like this? I don't know what that is. Oh, right. I'm thinking about this. I'm going to go learn about XYZ and keep that wonder and that playfulness of childhood. And that I always bring that up to people too. I'm like, okay, what did you like to do when you were like 8 or 9 years old? Because that's right. the time like before society tells you, you should like this or you shouldn't like that. Or people have told you all mm-hmm. these things about yourself that probably aren't true, that you've made part of your identity. But at that age, you're just free mm-hmm. to play and be yourself. And what did you like to do? Just try it. And so same thing. And thank you so much for being like vulnerable. My husband left 4 years ago. And that was like my crisis point. And it was like, mm-hmm. I know I need to take care of myself or this is all going to fall apart here. Cause it's now all my shoulders. But I honestly couldn't tell you what I like to do for fun. And my counselor was, okay, well, just make a list of things that might be fun. And so I did. And I tried guitar lessons. And you know what? That really hurt my fingers. And I couldn't have my fingers.
It's painful.
Yeah. And I was like, I ain't doing that. Like, after like, I don't play like Stevie Nicks. And so this, I'm done. This is not good.
Right.
But then there's other things that I've tried, like kayaking. And I'm like, roller skating. And I'm like, I love this. This is so fun.
It's so cool. That is so cool that you like roller skating. That's awesome.
Well, that goes back to what I used to like to do when I was a kid. I was like, I used to like roller skate. I wonder if I could still do that without breaking my neck. I love that, trying to find stuff. And I know that so many homeschool moms are like, I just don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds great, but I'm so busy right now. I just really don't have time. Mm-hmm. And what would you say to that?
I would say, first of all, I respect that feeling of not having time. It's a legitimate feeling that we go through, especially when our kids are younger. There is that intensity of time, that intensity of giving all the time. And first of all, I tell people all the time, just to honor that feeling. If you're feeling it, it's like the warning light in your car. Your warning light, the yellow light that comes up, isn't telling you have to stop right now. It's not the red one telling you there's an immediate emergency. It's just like an alert. And that when you say that I don't have time, it's almost like an alert. If you're saying I don't have time for myself, it's an alert. You know what? You probably should take time for yourself. And figuring it out means something else might have to give, and that's okay. But I always go back to, especially our children watch us. And when we model that we're taking time for ourselves, we are actually teaching them to be the next generation that say, this is very important. This is important. My mom modeled this. And because my kids have seen me reach that place of burnout and where it's really hard and it's a struggle. And I know that it's important for them to see me also thrive. Now, time, what you get to do is going to depend upon your situation too. I always say that. Know the season that you're in. Your self-care, your time for yourself will probably look very different than someone's self-care whose youngest is 18. Right. It's just totally different. You can't compare, and that's why it's figuring it out. And I give an example of my grandfather in Minnesota was when I grew up. I live in Nashville now, but I grew up in Minnesota. He was a farmer. And when it was harvest time, my grandfather was out in the fields harvesting. We would go to visit. He would barely come in, but I never thought grandpa doesn't love me because I just knew instinctively. And sometimes as moms, we have those seasons where we have to work really hard and it might not look like what we thought it would look like, but it doesn't mean that we're not showing love. And sometimes that really hard work is the quintessential way of giving love. And when we take time for ourselves, that is showing our kids, I love you so much that I am willing to invest in myself so I have more to give to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're both in the situation where we had to work to support.
Yes.
And so our kids are seeing that. And I know that a lot of other homeschool moms are working now just to support their families and have that dual income because it's the economy and everything, all this stuff. And so it's like more and more homeschool moms are also working and homeschooling at the same time. And so, but it is so hard of that struggle of, I feel so guilty because I'm taking time till you travel mm-hmm. for like your booked launches and things.
I have.
And I travel to speak at homeschool conventions. And so how do you balance that kind of guilt feeling and that shame? Because it's not going to serve you and it's not going to serve your family. Right. But what you're doing is actually very important for all of you.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned the word shame, because shame is one of the things I talk about in the book, especially about when you change your life and when you do stuff. Is shame it's like trying to douse your spark. It's wet. It doesn't provide anything. And it's, first of all, recognizing why am I feeling shame? And I actually think that question is powerful. Like sometimes we don't use the why question, but I really believe why is a really important thing that we ask ourselves. Not that we're going to get stuck in why me, but rather like that it's the wonder. It's a very powerful question of wondering. And the shame part, when we like, it doesn't serve us, right? But what happens is once we say, okay, I'm feeling it, instead of I'm feeling shame because I'm feeling shame. Yeah, right. Like you start to go in that cycle.
Making myself feel worse.
I'm worrying because I'm worrying. First of all, allowing ourselves to be human. Okay, I'm feeling this right now. It doesn't define who I am. It's an emotion. But what can I do? And then moving beyond it, like you speaking at homeschool conventions or me going and speaking about the book, my kids are really proud of me. They actually see, they see what is becoming of it. They see like, my mom is doing something to change our lives. They talk about it with their friends. There is this pride of seeing that there's a part of me that's not just mom, but also whatever I want to do. And being just mom is great. But there's also this part where I think our kids need to see, just I love to play piano now. They love seeing that because it's not even mom or working. It's something I like.
Yeah.
And I knew, oh, it was couple years, maybe 4 years after my divorce, that I was meeting with my daughter in Seattle. She was going to college there. And I thought she'd probably tell everybody that I was a good mom, but I don't know if she would know if that I was happy. And that eat me up inside. And I thought it's really important for our children to see, and for myself to live this life that I'm blessed to live with, blessed on this planet, not miserable, not downtrodden, not beaten up by life, not letting shame identify me, but really with that spark, that fire of me embracing who I was, who I'm created to be.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it really comes down to like how you're thinking about your work. And is it a takeaway? Is it a distraction from your family? Or is it a blessing? And is it something like you're saying, like you're modeling these healthy behaviors and these healthy goals for your kids, and it's a blessing and it's not something that's taking away from. It doesn't have to be and or, it can be both, and these both of these things mature lives.
I love you for saying that too. I wrote about that too. I like this, like that either or. There are stuff in life that has to be that way. Stop signs. I was like, I'm pretty glad we all know to stop at a stop sign. But there are other places where it has to be a little bit more nebulous. And what I liken it to is we live in a linear world. We live in a very linear world. You do A, you do B, you should get to C. You complete your school education, then you go to college. It's just very structured in that way. And when you look at time in that way, you only see it as that very structured. But if you can pull back a little bit into the wonder, into the non-linear thinking, that kind of both and, then you can, it opens up the possibility of something that doesn't fit within that structure. And that's what I encourage my kids to do, but I also try to do with myself. Okay, let me pull back a little bit and look at time and my schedule and the overall bigger picture in a different way.
Yeah, it's like allowing yourself to dream again of what is possible.
Yes.
But that feels, a lot of moms, that feels so, and this was my experience too, it feels so scary. Because if I dream again, what if it doesn't work? And what if I don't, I'm not happier, and I try things and it's hard still. And so the fear of even dreaming keeps us stuck, I feel like.
But I will tell you that I was just saying this, no decision is a decision. So if you're so fearful of dreaming, you're deciding I'm going to stay here. Yeah. And we think I'm like, the fear speaks so loud. I'm not going to dream. I'll dream someday, or I'll dream like the idea. What if I try and it gets worse or it doesn't work? But by not trying, you're eliminating, what if I try and it's amazing? What if I try and it's spectacular? What if I try and figure out who I am? Like, you're eliminating all the good because that negative part is, it's there. And I mean, I get it. Dreaming, risk-taking, that's why it's a dream. That's why it's a risk-taking. But if you don't ever try, what I always tell myself is, if I get to be 80, 85, like my grandmother lived to, I don't want to be 85 and thinking, wow, why didn't I try? And that question of what will I regret more? That is a question I ask myself very often, is what will I regret more? And most of the time it's not trying. I instantly know that the me 5 years from now, the me 10 years from now needs the me now to be like, okay, I'm going to try it, because that's what changes the future.
Are the holidays bringing you more stress than joy? Well, you're not alone. For many homeschool moms, the holiday season can feel like a never-ending list of demands, responsibilities, and difficult relationships to manage. You want to create a magical, joyful time for your family, but instead you end up feeling overwhelmed, drained, and stretched thin. Does this sound familiar? The never-ending to-do list, from homeschooling to holiday prep. How are you supposed to get it all done? Navigating difficult family dynamics and managing hurtful comments. Keeping your children happy and excited while trying to maintain peace at the same time. Feeling like there's just too much to do and not enough of you to go around. What if you could change all that? Imagine approaching this holiday season with a sense of calm, joy, and confidence, knowing that you can handle anything that comes your way, and creating beautiful memories can happen without stress or overwhelm. Introducing my course, The Peaceful and Joyful Holidays for Homeschool Moms. In this course, you'll discover life-changing tools and strategies that will help you move from stress and overwhelm to peace and confidence. You'll learn how to manage your emotions, strengthen your relationships, and create a joyful, meaningful holiday for your family without losing yourself in the process. If you want to learn more about this course, go to thefeastlife.me/holidays. Again, that's thefeastlife.me/holidays. I hope you can join me in this amazing course. You deserve to enjoy the holidays. You deserve to feel peace and joy with your family. And you deserve to feel confident navigating even the most challenging relationships. Enroll in joyful and peaceful holidays for homeschool moms today and make this season one you've always dreamed of, one filled with love, connection, and ease. Absolutely. And you talk in your book about effort and consistency. That's how to take the impossible and make it possible. So can you break that down, what that actually practically means?
Okay, I would love to. So you need both. You need to put in the work. You probably have people that you've been around, or you've done it yourself, because I've done it where you're like the perpetual, I'll do it tomorrow. And you just talk, but you never do anything. Yes. So you absolutely have to put in the effort, and the effort is uncomfortable. It often means, especially if you have no idea what you want to do, it means you're going to be a beginner. It means it's going to be uncomfortable. It means you're going to be in a different spot. But if you're never a beginner, you never get to be the spot like you, where you get to go talk at homeschool conventions. You're there because you allowed yourself to be in that spot of, I have no idea what I'm doing. I have no idea.
I had four people.
I've done a book tour. I get it. Yeah. I get it. You just go through that process. And if you're like allowing that first talk where there's no four people to go, I don't want to do that, then you will never get to the spot where it's a full room. And you have to be willing to be that beginner. So that's the effort. It's that effort. Like for me, I give an example often about people will say, I can't run. I could never run. And I'm like, okay. And this is just the universal. I'm not telling you right now, you should go be a runner, but I give this example is, then I'll say, what if you could run from your driveway to the stop sign at the end of the block and then be done? And then they're like, well, I could maybe do that. And so then they do that. And then I say, well, if you do it the next day and you run 5 feet beyond and you keep doing that every day, 5 feet beyond, pretty soon running to the stop sign is going to not be a big deal. And it goes back to that kind of thing we were talking in the beginning, is so often we're like, we see, I'm only a runner if I run 3.2 miles.
Right.
And we forget that you're actually a runner when you run. Like you run to the stop sign, you were a runner at that point, and it's being willing to go through that. So that's the effort of, okay, the next day I'm going to run 5 feet beyond it. And like I said, eventually that stop sign is going to be like nothing. The consistency is holding yourself accountable to keep trying, to keep doing it, to keep at it, whether it's you run for 6 months and then you realize, you know what, maybe I would like to bike more, but then you switch to something, you keep trying something versus going, that didn't work out, I'm not going to do anything. It's the consistency that makes the progress happen. Like because I gave the piano example, the reason I can open up a book of Mozart sonatas and play them right now is because of effort. I had to keep practicing, and consistency because my parents made sure that I kept practicing because they were paying a lot of money for me to get there. But eventually my parents no longer had to sit there and tell me to keep practicing because I learned to love it. And yeah, That's what happens.
Yeah. And anytime you're a beginner or anything, it's not fun. Like when I played the guitar badly, that wasn't fun to listen to. And running and not being able to keep your breath, it's always hard. and to not see that as a bad thing, but oh, this is to be expected. I'm starting for, of course, it's going to be hard.
And what's interesting about that is because I've been on this book tour, I haven't been as consistent with my running. And I actually know that when I go out, probably tomorrow morning and run, it's going to be awful. I already know it's going to feel like I've never run before and all that. But I also know that if I allow that it's going to be awful to stop me, every single day that I wait to start, it's going to get more awful. Yes. And so that's the part about it. Like when the consistency is recognizing you're strong enough to handle the days where it's not fun, because it will eventually get to be the spot where you're like, when I'd come home and I'd be like, that was the best day ever. But I have to be willing to be uncomfortable. And progress is not being uncomfortable just once, but it's like a wave. It's you hit these little bumps and you got to push through it.
Yeah, that's so good. It's so funny because that's actually my like story of how I got into running. So never a runner, like in cheerleading in high school, we had to run a mile and I never could do it. And I was always so nervous. And then about 10 years ago, my friend started running and I'm like, I don't know. I've never been a runner. I don't think I could do it.
Right.
But I was like, okay, same thing. I'm going to run from my house to the stop sign at the end of the street and I'm going to do that.
Amen.
And then talk about consistency. I had 3 kids under the age of 3 and then my older 2 girls who were like 8 and 9, I guess, at the time. And what I would do is I would put them in the backyard to play and I would just run back and forth in front of my house because I was
love
like,
that.
This is my time to run and I don't have anyone else to watch you. And so you can yell if you need me from the backyard, right? But like, I'm not going to miss my run because I am doing this. I have set a goal. I'm doing this thing for myself. And so I just wanted to share that because I can totally relate to you on that. I think another thing you said is really important too about I'm a runner and seeing yourself as that, whether you're running to the stop sign or you're running a half marathon. And so it really comes down to what words you're telling yourself about yourself, like what your identity is. And so saying, I like to run someday. I'll be a runner when I do a 5K. And then you're constantly telling yourself you're not something rather than telling yourself you already are that before you even get to whatever your goal is. So can you speak to a little bit about like the words that we're telling ourselves about ourselves?
I would love to. We minimize what we do. I always say to moms, I'm just a mom. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, right.
You can put the word just in front of it because it minimizes it. But I feel like in some ways we were taught, at least me, I grew up in the 80s, to be humble, but I took it the wrong way. Oh, don't add that. Make yourself seem smaller than you are. Like it was like, don't be braggadocious. Don't be all that. But there are places in life where you just have to be like, that is who I am. I'm a writer. I'm an author. I'm a runner. You know what? I'm a speaker, all of that. Because when you say that, you're stepping into that identity. And you're right. Like for myself, I would be like, I don't know if I'm a runner. And my husband would be like, in 2022, you ran 1,000 miles. At what point are you going to actually allow yourself to call yourself that? And I think what sometimes we're a little nervous about that because it means stepping into it, accepting it, and being that person. Like we justify ourselves. We're looking for the reasons, oh, I'm not. And I really want to encourage moms and women to just step into that, step into who you were created to be. Like, we love it when our kids do something that lights them up. We are like, yes, look at them. If they're on the baseball team or swimming or whatever it may be, their art, he's an artist. We're not like, we never say he's just an artist. Like, we are telling it to them. And I want us to do the same.
That's so key. That's so important. I love that. And one of the other things you mentioned was what to do to handle days when it's not fun. One, to expect it, but then like, how do you build that kind of emotional resilience to be able to handle the feelings when it's not fun?
For me, it's looking at life like it's a wave and you have the crests and then you have the troughs and you have those. And I always tell moms, everybody, I say your track record for surviving really bad days is 100%. And one of the things we forget that and to allow yourself to have the bad day, because I think otherwise we're hard on ourselves. Shame. If I was a better mom, this wouldn't have happened, versus recognizing sometimes life gives us a lot of stuff. And we sometimes our emotional reserves aren't there. Or for me, I'm like, my hormones are getting wacky right now. And I don't allow myself. And I'm like, what has happened?
Yes.
And I don't allow myself to be human. It's like I had, and when I step back and go, you're just a human. Or I think if you were having a bad day, you wouldn't cut me down the way that my own internal dialogue would cut myself down. And so I tell myself, what would I say to my friends? And sometimes it means, okay, I remember this when I was homeschooling, like having one of those days where I was fighting like everything, nothing was going right. And then just deciding, that's it. I'm calling it a day. I'm calling it a day. I'm going to give myself the grace that, okay, we did our best. Now, it's not every day was like that, but when you give yourself that space to be human, then it makes it easier to go forward. I also tell everyone, when you have a great, fantastic day where you are like, I can do anything, like you just, it feels amazing to circle it, make a note on your Google Calendar, do something, because when you have the hard days, it's hard to remember. And so I really believe remembering the good, it's a powerful process. And then you can look back and go, oh yeah, that's right. Did have a good day. And it was awesome knowing that another one will come.
Yeah. Or even the good moments in a day. Cause you can have both days.
Right.
You can have a good day, yeah. And a hard day all in the 24 hour period.
Yeah. It's like weather. It's like weather in Minnesota. It changes constantly. Yeah.
That's right. So finding the good, even if it was just in the morning, it's totally good.
Right.
Really awesome.
That is actually a very good point. Is I think often because I tell people I'm a recovering perfectionist is when I dealt with, if a bad moment happened or something hard happened, it would paint over the whole day. It just instantly negate everything. Yep. Mm-hmm. And it's 5% of the day. So it was a process to retrain my brain to go, that's just part of my day, but what else is good? Because I really felt if I didn't sit in the bad stuff, then I don't know. Like I had this part of me that was afraid to let it go. And moving to the good has been a very powerful shift. It takes a little bit of work. It takes me saying, you know what? I'm willing to sit in this for, I'll set a timer. I'm going to sit in this for 5 minutes. And generally after 2 minutes, I'm like, I'm done. I'm totally done. And then moving on to something else, because I used to carry it all with me. Remember this, remember that. And that doesn't serve you.
No, 100% no. It just allows you more ammo to beat yourself up.
Right.
What are we doing here, people? We don't need any more, right? And I love that you talk about going back to this identity piece and the thoughts that we're telling ourselves. It really also ties into the things that we're telling ourselves that aren't true. Talk a little bit about how oftentimes these self-limiting beliefs are putting out the spark that's in us.
Yeah, the self-limiting beliefs is interesting. So I shared it in the book about how I kept myself under the radar and I believed that I was only capable of so much or all of, and I remember going to see my counselor talking about it and I didn't know I was the one with the self-limiting belief. I came in and thought it was everybody else was keeping me in this spot and I was angry. And she probably knew, oh, it's probably her. I'm not going to tell her because she's not going to admit it yet.
Like me, high sticker. See, it's me, hi, yeah. I'm a promise me. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it. So she went through this process. And then finally, about 2 years in, all of a sudden I was like, I'm the one doing it. I am the one. It hit me so much like a ton of bricks. And the self-limiting belief would be like, I wasn't worthy. I wasn't good enough. Who does she think she is? That I didn't have. The self-limiting belief was honestly that I did not trust myself to have the answers. I needed everybody else's opinions. I needed everybody else to tell me what to do. Yep. And what ended up happening for me was I started during this spark back journey, started going to a meditation class, and I've gone to women's groups and stuff for a long time. So I did this. I thought, I'm going to try this. First of all, if you think that meditation or all that is quieting your mind, it's generally not. It's generally your brain is like, whoa, you're just sitting. All this stuff can come in.
Yes.
But what ends up happening is once all that stuff came in, I finally got to hear myself think. It would get to a place where I could truly that be still. But for years, I never even allowed myself to get to the place where I could be still.
Yeah, 100%.
So I could start to hear my own.
That's when we're still, that's when all that stuff happens. We don't want to let's be busy and not think
it
about
it. It starts going and you have to go through. Yes, exactly. So this happened. So I go to this group and there was a timer and it would get uncomfortable. But I would make myself sit through whatever it was, go through the chatter and then get to the place where I could think. The second most most powerful thing happened. When it was done, everyone would share. And nobody ever, I would share like whatever insight I heard or thought about. And then when it was done, that was it. Everyone would just say, thank you for sharing. And for the first time in my life, because most of the time I share, and then women, we like to, we give feedback, we listen. And so for most of my life, yes. And so I would go and do what I'd be like, oh, maybe what I heard is wrong. And then I would switch it. But the power was when they said, thank you for sharing, then I learned to trust myself. And I really, trust was something, especially going through a bad marriage and a hard marriage and all that stuff. Trust was, it was hard, and trusting myself was trusting what I would like, that I could make a confident decision. And that was one of the most powerful things that came through the Get Your Spark Back journey was, okay, I'm going to trust myself to make a confident decision. If it doesn't work, that's okay. I'm making a decision. And that wherever we started with that conversation, that's where I ended it. Cause I'm like, did I answer her question?
You were talking about like your limiting belief and how you
got. Oh yeah. The limiting belief was that I needed everybody else's opinion. I needed to get everybody else's opinion and hash out the thing over and over again versus saying, no, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to move forward with that.
I love that. And that's actually really powerful. That's something I talk to a lot of moms about, because in homeschooling, like we keep, again, that overanalyzing everything, but then there's so many different opinions about parenting, about homeschooling, about the whole gamut here. And if you listen to all of it, you're just going to be more confused.
I give the example of when you're a new mom and you decide you're going to get a pacifier for your baby, and you go to Target and you go, and it's not just one, there's a row. And then in the row, there's a million different choices. And then you finally decide one, and you get home, and the first thing on Facebook is the anti-pacifier argument. So then you're like, what do I do? And that's life. I love the information we have, but the second we make a decision, you're going to see the counter decision. And so I really believe for us and for our kids, teaching us and stepping into making a confident decision when you're going to get told instantly that it's the wrong decision is a very powerful life lesson.
Yeah. And learning to trust that inner voice, trust that be guided, get wisdom, and being able to go, no, this is what I'm going to do. And if, even if it doesn't turn out the way I might want it to, I'm going to try this. And it's so hard to do, because quite honestly, you can get judged by other moms. We're really good at that.
So yes.
You might make a decision and you might really feel like it's the right one. And then you make it. And the moment you make it, you are now like on the hot seat, and everybody has an opinion about you and your decision. Have you, I'm sure you, as an author and doing book tours, I'm sure people have had opinions about your book.
Oh yes. A couple things is, one of the things I really implore women to do is to not judge others and to not judge yourself so harshly, because when we judge, we're limited. It's like, you can, going back to as a little kid, that little song that you sing, This Little Light of Mine. And then there was, I'm going to let it shine. And then the two ways to put out your spark, your light, was a box on your, like putting it under a bushel or it getting blown out. And when we judge, it's those two things. We're boxing somebody else's limitations, or we're boxing our own, or we're blowing out whatever momentum there is. And so I'm like, there is no time to be judged. It's like stepping back and going, you know what, I'm going to love that person for that decision. Now, if it's a big life decision or something like that, a lot of times we don't see the buildup to that decision. We see the splash in the pond, and then all of a sudden we're like, whoa, who does she think she is? Without recognizing there's probably 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, long time of buildup to make that decision, because not all of our friends and not the whole world is in on the inner details of what's happening in our lives, which is another reason to not judge. The best thing I've ever heard about not allowing the judges, those kind of judgments bother us, was the writer of Seinfeld, Larry David. I heard once that he threw out the home pitch at a Yankees game, whole stadium cheers, everybody, it's amazing. He gets in the car after it, he's in his limo, and someone raps on the window, and they yell in the window at you, because I think your podcast is clean, you're not awesome. Yeah. They yell, but and they're really rough on him.
Yeah.
And he gets to Larry King Live, and he talks about the one person that dragged him down. And then he had the realization that if he's spending the time looking at the one, he's ignoring the 50,000 that loved him. And it's the same thing in life is sometimes people, I think the human nature is to express opinions. But when you're on a path that's changing your life, it's learning to trust that, okay, I'm doing this. I know I felt unbelievably isolated when I went through after my divorce because I was living this public private life, knowing it, and then finding the allies that will help you there. The truth tellers that will tell you're on the right path. You're doing this. This is important. So yeah.
And again,
it's
you
a combo
of both. The other extreme and be like, I'm all on my own and I'm just going to blaze right.
No, like, you need people.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that? You talked about that in the book about our fellow travelers. Can you just talk about the importance and we'll wrap up here.
Yeah. I really believe we weren't created, especially as women, to do stuff on our own. Like we just need other people. We need friends. Life is so much more important. And I know there's someone listening that's, I don't have any friends and I don't know where to find them. And the only way you're going to find friends and make friends is to put yourself into situations where you can find friends. Like you can't find them at home. You can join forums, but it's also when you make friends, it's a level of vulnerability of putting yourself out there, being okay if it doesn't work out, trying things, and then showing up for them. I share about my friend Heather who lived by me, and she was like, she came over one day in January and was like, can we meet every week for 15 minutes just to check in and I'll see you next week. It wasn't like, hey, does this work? Cause you know, we'll be like, let me get back to you. And how about next week? Yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah. I'll pencil you in.
Can we make a reservation 5 years from now? We're all going to get together. It's ridiculous trying to coordinate schedules.
I'm going to do this no matter what. And then because of that, we became really good friends. And she was unapologetic about needing a friend. Like, absolutely. Yeah. I'm so sorry. She didn't go, I'm so sorry to bother you. So I need to have a check-in, like just showing up. And when you do that, you give each other permission. So friendship, it's so powerful. It's just that amazing connection. And if you look at history and you look at movies, the stuff that we love are those real tales of friends where that friend has each other's back. And we get the opportunity to be that for somebody else. And when we're vulnerable, we give somebody else the opportunity to do it for ourselves, for us.
And I think that what you just said there is the key, is the vulnerability piece, because you can like talk to someone in carpool line and you can
right.
see someone at church and be like, how are you doing? Fine. Okay, great. Yeah, fine. Or the neighbor walking down the street. But like the moment when you're able to connect and be like, oh yeah, I've been there. I understand what you're going through, but it takes that level. And it's scary. Again, it goes back to this whole thing we've been talking about this whole time and working through the fear and the shame of, oh, if they knew that, they probably wouldn't talk to me.
But I think most of us have imperfect lives. I always tell people, nobody puts in their yearbook, it'll be fun when I'm 18. When I'm 40, I'm going to go through a divorce. That'd be awesome. And we all have stories. We all have ups and downs. And the best way to be a friend is just to be real about it and not have that, I've got to keep it all together. I've said for years that if you come to my house and I immediately apologize for the mess, I put on you the presupposition that if I come to your house, you better not have a mess because I apologized. It's more just come on in. Let's do life together.
Yeah, I love that. It takes all the pressure off too, because it's not like I can have friends or I can be in a relationship where everything's perfect.
And we all have dishes. Yeah. If we're apologizing for the dishes, we all have dishes all the time. And they're going to be there. Sometimes they're going to be in the dishwasher and sometimes they're not.
We all got to eat and we all use
plates. Right.
So yes, we have dishes. Okay. Let's move on. I love it. This conversation has been so fun. Before we wrap up, can you just tell moms like where to get your book, where to connect with you, any final words of encouragement, that sort of thing?
Sure. So you can get, most people connect with me on Facebook at Finding Joy Blog. Type that in. You'll see my face, little blue check mark that Meta says that I'm real. And then, or else at my website, findingjoy.net. And then Get Your Spark Back. It's at Amazon, Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, Bookshop, your independent bookstore, anywhere books are sold. And I guess my encouragement is just to know that you are really worthy of living a great life, that you can do this, that when you take care of your soul, your spark, that not only will you find happiness again and that purpose and that zest for life, but you will honestly inspire your friends and your children to do the same. And that is an incredibly powerful life gift.
Yeah, that's such a great feeling, right? Isn't it? When you're proud of you and your friends and you're inspiring other people. And then that makes you like want to even do it even more and keep going. And it's such a great feeling. It's so powerful. I had no idea what that would feel like, that when I was fully alive, how that would just blow. I had no idea. And so
it's amazing.
So I'm so glad that you're writing about that and encouraging moms to do that. So thank you so much for coming on today. Appreciate it.
It was an honor to be here. So thank you.
Hey there, Julie Ross here. I just wanted to say thank you for listening to today's episode. If you like this show, it would mean the world to me if you would leave a positive review in iTunes. This really does help people learn about the podcast. And each month, I will pick a winner to receive a free gift. Don't forget to check out all the free resources we created for you at thefeastlife.me. Thank you.